This message is presented to you by Pastor James Moore and New Life Community Church in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information or to donate, please visit newlifekc.com.
A few years ago, I had the opportunity to teach our teenagers, and I gave them a quiz. And if you'll let me, I'd like to give you the same quiz this morning. Is that okay? Okay. It's only 4 questions. So please just get a pen and paper or your notepad or on the back of your bulletin and just write 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay? But you're ready. Don't miss this. You have it? Are you ready to answer? Okay. Somebody's still looking for paper. All right. Number 1. What was God's purpose for creating humans? Okay, write your answer down. What was God's purpose for creating humans? Number 2, what is your greatest fear? What is your greatest fear? Number 3, what is your primary goal in life? What is your primary goal in life? And number 4, what is your greatest love? What was God's purpose for creating humans? What is your greatest fear? What's your primary goal in life? What's your greatest love? Okay. Now let's put that aside for now. And we'll come back to that in a little while. Right now, I'd like for us to look at the 12th chapter of Luke to see what Jesus has to say to us today. Be dressed for service and well prepared, as though you were waiting for your master to return from the wedding feast. Then you will be ready to open the door and let him in the moment he arrives and knocks. There will be special favor for those who are ready and waiting for his return. I tell you, he himself will seat them, put on an apron, and serve them as they sit and eat. He may come in the middle of the night or just before dawn, but whenever he comes, there will be special favor for his servants who are ready. Know this, a homeowner who knew exactly when the burglar was coming would not permit the house to be broken into. You must be ready all the time, for the Son of Man will come when least expected. Peter asked, Lord, is this illustration just for us or for everyone? And the Lord replied, I'm talking to any faithful, sensible servant to whom the master gives the responsibility of managing his household and feeding his family. If the master returns and finds that the servant has done a good job, there will be a reward. I assure you, the master will put that servant in charge of all he owns. But if the servant thinks, my master won't be back for a while, and begins oppressing the other servants and partying and getting drunk, well, the master will return unannounced and unexpected. He will tear the servant apart and banish him with the unfaithful. The servant will be severely punished, for though he knew his duty, he refused to do it. But people who are not aware that they are doing wrong will be punished only lightly. Much is required from those to whom much more is given. Luke 12, 35 through 48. I once read about a wealthy family from Massachusetts who had used to take a month's vacation every summer to the coast of Maine. And they always took their maid with them. She had an annual ritual at the beach. She wore a old-fashioned bathing suit, complete with a little white hat, arms full of all kinds of paraphernalia. And she would settle herself on the beach and cover every exposed inch of flesh, and finally journey down to the water's edge. And there she would hesitate while taking deep breaths, and slowly she would work up the courage to enter the icy cold water. She would daintily extend 1 foot and lower it slowly into the water until she barely had her big toe submerged. Can you see it? Can you picture it? Then she repeated the act with the other foot. And then, having satisfied her minimal urge to swim, she would retreat to her chair and umbrella, and she would spend the remainder of the vacation curled up with a book. And she reminds me of many Christians I have known. They have the stuff of greatness in them, but they never really wade into the waters of Christian discipleship. Oh, maybe a toe, sometimes an ankle, but rarely do they get so stirred up with the Spirit of God that they attempt anything great for the Lord. They're like a car whose transmission is locked in neutral. The sound of the motor is really impressive. The lights and the radio, oh, they work fine. The tread on the tires is brand new. They're shiny. They're attractive. The only problem is they're not going anywhere. They settle for being only nominal followers of the master. Bring to mind something that baseball player Luis Gonzalez once said. Gonzalez, he played outfield for the Houston Astros, and he had a personal motto, which he once shared with a group of sports writers. And his motto was, "Go hard or go home." And time again, we find Jesus saying basically the same thing to his disciples. Go hard or go home. One of the great unspoken commandments of the scripture is we are to make our lives count for something. We're accountable for our actions. Did you know that? We're called to have dominion over our own destinies. In the very first chapter of the Bible, Adam was to have dominion over his world, and so are we. We're not to be reeds blown by every wind, nor are we to be rocks that are unmoving and immovable. We are, however, to be responsible men and women who recognize that God has entrusted us, each of us, with the precious gift of freedom. And along with that freedom, God has given us untold opportunities to alter our circumstances. We've given lots of opportunities to adjust our situations and to improve our lives. See, we're free to make our lives count for something. In other words, Jesus wants his followers to be productive. That's the first thing we need to see. In today's lesson, he tells a parable about a wise and faithful servant whom his master left in charge of his household. How happy the master will be, Jesus tells us, if he returns to find the servant living up to his responsibilities. And that's what Christ desires in each of us, to live up to our responsibilities, to make productive use of our time. Time is a precious commodity. My life would be much different if I knew I had unlimited time. But since there isn't unlimited time, we all have time that's allotted to us and no more, let's make every minute count. You'll notice that a productive person, that it is the productive person that Jesus praises time and time again. Jesus closed this particular parable by adding these words, "To whom much is given, much is expected." That's the basic message of Jesus' parable of the talents in Matthew 25. Those who put their talents to work were praised and their talents increased, but those who buried their talent in the ground, even that guy had the one talent he had taken from him. I think there's a rather amusing scene in Exodus 14 where the children of Israel are up against the Red Sea, and the army of Pharaoh is hot on their heels. Moses is exhorting the people to trust in God, to trust that God will not forsake them. And right in the middle of Moses' exhortation, God interrupts him. As the Living Bible paraphrases it, God says to Moses, "Quit praying and get the people moving forward. March." You see, there's a time for praying, but there's also a time for moving forward. There is no virtue in standing still. What good is a tree, Jesus said, if it doesn't bear good fruit? In Luke 6:46, he says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and yet you won't do what I say?" See, Jesus calls his people to be productive. He wants us to use our brains, use our energies. He wants us to dream dreams. He wants us to move mountains. I love the story of Bill Borden, who went to China as a missionary. And while he was there, he ended up dying of an oriental disease. And at his bedside, they found a note he had written while he was dying. And the note said, "No reserve, no retreat, and no regrets." Oh, I like that. I'm sure Jesus loved that too. No reserve, no retreat, no regrets. Jesus wanted his disciples to be productive and powerful. And that, by the way, is the meaning of faith. Faith is not belief based on an intellectual promise. Faith is action based on an eternal promise. That's the message of Hebrews 11. The writer begins with Cain and Abel, and he shows that by faith, the great men of old received the blessings of God. From Abel to Abraham, he shows how God's faithful to those who walk according to his purpose. And one of the names included in that list, by the way, is that of Enoch. Interestingly, the name of Enoch's son, anybody know who that is? Yeah, you don't. Methuselah. You ever heard of him? You may remember Methuselah, he's the oldest person there, lived longer than anybody else, lived 969 years. That's all we know about him. He lived longer than anyone else has ever lived, but as far as we know, he made no other impact while he was here. Except that he lived a long time. Referring to our funeral yesterday, Julie didn't have that long time, but she made an impact. People asked me after the funeral was over, they said, "Hey, did you leave anything out?" I said, "Are you kidding me? We barely got anything in. We could have been here all day," because she made an impact. Methuselah in 969 years didn't make an impact that Julie did in 45. Listen, God calls his people to be productive and powerful. He calls us to make our lives count, to take charge, to go hard or go home. Another word people like to use nowadays is passionate. So let me ask you, what is your passion? Motivational speakers, they'll tell us that we will be successful if we follow our passion. And by the way, that's true. I was reading recently about the prolific writer of Western novels. I think the best Western novel writer there ever was, named Louis L'Amour. Anybody know who he is? Anybody read Louis L'Amour book? I read all of them, yeah. And if you haven't, you may get interested after I tell you what I'm going to tell you. At one time, L'Amour was one of the most popular authors. He wrote 89 novels. He wrote 250 short stories. He sold more than 320 million copies of his work. His writings were translated into more than 20 languages. And this kind of production didn't come out of some half-hearted effort. See, L'Amour constantly searched for factual material to fill his novels. I mean, if once he found an abandoned cabin whose occupants 70 years earlier had used newspaper to insulate the structure against the winds. And so he spent days and days removing this insulation, this homemade insulation, and he took the newspapers home and read through all these, enough to the whole house, and he got enough facts out of that for two stories. That's all, just two stories out of all that. But he spent the time to do it. And that wasn't isolated, but he started a novel. By the time he started one and wrote it, He was armed with copies of every topographical map and relief map and mine chart that existed. If you read in his book about some place in Kansas or in Oklahoma or wherever it is, that place is there. It's not a joke. So it's pretty cool. My description, she said, must be right. When I tell my readers about a well in the desert, he knows it's there. And that the water is good to drink. One time, for just $3 a day, he agreed to help an 80-year-old trapper who had been hired to skin all the dead cattle on a rancher's spread. Well, that sounds like a good job. Lemoore later remembered, he said, there were 925 of those dead cows. And some had been dead for a while. Nobody else would come near the place, he said. But the old man had a story to tell. See, he'd been kidnapped by Apaches, and when he was 7 years old, been brought up as one of them, he'd ridden under the great chiefs, Nana and Geronimo. And so Lemoore concluded, he said, I had him all to myself for 3 months while we skinned those cows. I got a lot of materials for the books I wrote later, Hondo and Skyliners and so forth. Now that, friends, is passion. Would you be willing to skin 925 cows, some of them dead for some time, just to get a few facts? That's why he was at the top of his profession. So what is it that you have a passion for? You all know who Rick Warren is, pastor and author, Rick Warren. He said one time he typed the phrase, a passion for, into the Amazon.com and found a couple hundred books with that title. He said there's a book called A Passion for Birds. There's a passion for books, a passion for cactus, a passion for chocolate, for fashion, for fishing, for flying, for gardening, for needlepoint, for pasta, for ponies. There's even a book called A Passion for Potatoes. And there's a one called A Passion for Steam. Then Rick Warren, he adds this observation. He says, but in our culture, it's okay to be passionate about anything except your religion, except your faith, except your relationship with God. He said, I can go to a rock concert, I can go to a political rally or a baseball game, and I can shout my head off. I can get so excited, I can get hoarse from yelling so loud, and when my team loses, I can even cry, and nobody thinks that's a big deal. When my team wins, I can jump up and dance around, wave my hands in the air, and if I do that at a game, people go, he's a real fan. If I do that in church, people say, he's a real fanatic. Exactly. He's a nutcase. You don't want to get too emotional about your faith, he says. It's okay about anything else, but not that. And unfortunately, I think we can all relate to that. And that's a crying shame. I'm afraid that what's missing in many of us is passion. We simply have no great driving passion for God. Oh, it's not that we're bad people. In fact, we desire to be better than we are. But we don't want to get too excited about it. I mean, we may not be all that happy with our lives, but then again, why rock the boat? No passion, no power, no production. There is, however, one more descriptive word we should add here, and that word is prepared. The master leaves the servant in charge until he returns, and he expects the servant to be prepared to give an accounting of his stewardship. So I'm going to ask you today, if the master were to return right now, and ask you to give an accounting of your life, would you be prepared? You realize, don't you, that there are some people, good people, salt of the earth people, who will literally have nothing to show the master. Oh, they were nice enough. They never got in any real trouble. But they made no real contribution to their world or their community or their church. Christ wanted them to be productive and powerful and passionate and prepared, but they just kind of blended into the landscape for their 70 or 80 years. And I'm afraid that the words of the master, unto whom much is given,